High Command came to take Zane under the pretense of reassignment. A reassignment that had no Antari backing or Munitorum approval. It is just like what Rain found in Teula's records. Zane would have been registered MIA, just like the other psychers, sent to join all of the other ghosts.
And when you intervened, Rain says to Wick, what did they do?
He is flexing his fingers in an effort to stop his hands shaking. Rain has seen him do it before. If you didn't know him, you could take it for nerves.
They told me it was above my clearance, he says. Then they tried to shoot me.
Rain knows he is telling the truth. There is a way to Wick's voice when he lies.
So you killed them before they could kill you, Rain says. Before they could take Zane.
He breaks eye contact with her for a moment and looks to the pistol she holds at her side. Then he rolls his shaking hands into fists.
Yes, he says.
He was not the only one to do the killing, Zane says.
The psyker looks physically diminished after facing Cretia Omatid, almost as if she has been starved. There are dark hollows around her false eyes, and her veins are stark under her skin.
I broke one of the soldiers, she says absently. He shattered easily, like eggshells.
Mr. Life, Wick says.
He is already sitting as far as he can from Zane, but he recoils from her anyway. To Rain, that hatred has always seemed rather a double standard for someone as damaged as he is.
Before he broke, I caught the edges of the soldier's memories, Zane says. They were shattered too, in pieces. But there were images.
Rain is practiced at hiding her emotions. It is a necessity as a commissar to keep your balance at all times, just like running those icy gantries over the ocean, to be sure and swift in your choices. But the more that Rain hears, the more difficult it is to remain balanced. It is the fact that the traitors managed to slip by her and get to one of her own regiment. It makes her heart burn. Makes her want to do much more than just pace the room. But she cannot. Not yet. Rain takes a steady breath.
What images? She asks evenly. What did you see?
Machines, Zane says. Needles being pushed under skin. I saw them in the soldiers' memories. Then again in my dreams.
She takes a ragged breath.
I did not know it then, but it was the fate engines I saw, Zane says. They are fueled by the gifted, by taking power from those like me, and using it to change the fate of another soul.
Wick shakes his head. His manacled hands move to make that superstitious Antari gesture of steepled fingers.
Justar and his lot wanted the engines preserving, he says. You are telling me that they meant to use them.
Zane shakes her head.
Not for themselves, she says. It is the King of Winter who seeks the fate engines.
Rain blinks at Zane's words, at having the story Fel told her be twisted.
The King of Winter, Wick says. You're talking about the old stories.
I am talking about a monster who seeks the hearts of the strong,
Zane snarls.
I saw it in my dreams.
Zane shakes her head. She has paled, even more so than usual.
Omatid spoke of him too, she says, though she called him by another name.
What name? Rain asks.
Manticore,
Zane whispers.
She called him Manticore and said that we would know him soon enough. He is one of us, not one of them. Hidden amongst loyal souls.
Wick shakes his head again.
And you're going to trust the words of a traitor witch?
Zane turns her silver eyes on him, furious, and Wick flinches away from her.
I do not trust Cretia Ormatid, Zane snarls. She is wicked and false. She lies.
The cables at the Psyker's scalp hum, and Rain catches the scent of ozone. The chair Zane is sitting on rattles.
Control, Rain says, firmly.
Zane exhales a long breath before nodding.
I do not trust Cretia Ormatid, she says again,
as if it bears repeating.
I trust what I saw in my dreams and what I felt.
What did you feel? Rain asks.
The Manticore is afraid of death, Zane says. It has known the touch of the After. It has been bloodied by the jaws of the hounds, and it seeks a way to undo it for good.
To change fate, Wick says, in exchange for its soul. That's what you said.
Zane looks at him sidelong.
That is what I said.
Wick curses again in Antari. Enough, Rain says. Just as she told Vanda, Rain does not trust either Wick or Zane. But she does understand them. They are two of a kind. Broken edges that can be used effectively, if handled carefully. They can be relied upon to act and react in ways she can anticipate. It is the reason that they are both still living, despite the risks they pose.
Listen to me carefully, Rain says, because I will say this only once, and have no doubt that I mean every word.
She looks at each of them in turn, at Wick's flint grey eyes and Zane's false silver ones.
Not a word spoken in this chamber leaves it, Rain says. Not about the Cavrone, not about the one called the Manticore. Is that clear?
Yes, Wick says.
Aye,
says Zane.
You are both Antari, Rain says. You know the importance of loyalty. Know that we fight for the Baelstars and for the Emperor, no matter what that means or who we have to face to do it. We will not back down or become complicit in corruption.
Rain ejects the magazine from her pistol and takes out two of the shells, one for each of them.
Both of you have killed in cold blood, she says. The punishment for such an act is death.
Neither Wick nor Zane speak. They just look at the shells in the palm of Rain's gloved hand. Their death sentences, wrought in steel.
I will stay those punishments, she says, on the understanding that you are acting out of loyalty, and you will do so without question in future. That if you see or hear anything else, you bring it straight to me. Do we understand one another?
Yes, Commissar.
This time the answer comes from both of them, without hesitation or a trace of deceit. That's another thing Rain understands about the two of them, and the Antari in general. They place a great value on debts owed, and on what is given being repaid. By staying their sentences, she has placed them firmly in her debt. Rain finds manipulation distasteful, but it is another skill that she is practiced in, another necessity for a Commissar.
Good, Rain says, because failure will mean death.
Zane nods.
As it always does, she says.
Rain finds herself nodding too.
Yes, she says, as it always does.
Steadfast, before. Severina Rain sits in the hallway with her fists locked together tightly. So tightly that her nails dig into her skin. So tightly that her hands can't shake in the way that they so want to.
Cadet?
The word makes her look up. It comes from the guard, the big one with the cruel scar that has turned one of his eyes porcelain white and useless. He has a heavy pistol at his belt and a las rifle slung across his chest. His uniform is black, like Severina's own. Executioner's black.
It is time,
he says. Severina gets to her feet. Her legs try to shake now,
just like her hands. She follows the guard down the hallway, keeping her eyes on his back, and not on the bare rock-crete walls, or the heavy, windowless cell doors set into them. Her boots ring on the stone floor, and she is reminded for a moment of that day long ago. The day an officer came to explain that her mother was dead.
"In here?"
the guard says, and he indicates the last of the heavy doors.
5 minutes. No longer.
Severina reaches out and releases the bolt on the door. It echoes in the silence of the corridor. She pushes the heavy door open, steps into the cell, and takes her seat in the empty chair bolted to the floor. Then she finally looks at the cell's occupant, whose hands are knitted together too, and bound by silver chains that lock to the table in front of her.
"Sister,"
Lucia says, softly. Her eyes are flat, like dulled metal. Bruising presses in on them and coils itself around Lucia's throat. Old blood is dried around her nose. Coward's blood.
"Do not call me that," Severina says. "You have no right."
Lucia nods. "No," she says. "I suppose not." Lucia falls silent and still. The penitence shift she wears hangs from her, as if she has not eaten in weeks.
"Will you say nothing?" Severina asks.
"What would you have me say?" Lucia says. "What could I possibly tell you that could ease that agony you feel? Do you want me to tell you that I regret my actions? That I was fooled or framed?" She shakes her head. "They would be lies, Severina. And no matter what else I have become, I will not lie. Not to you." Severina is no longer able to control the way she trembles. All of the pretty words she imagines saying melt away like snow, and the only ones left are the ones that hurt as badly as she does.
"How could you?" Severina asks. "How could you give in to it? After everything we promised one another."
Lucia reaches across the table, as far as the chains will allow. Her fingertips barely brush against Severina's wrist, making her recoil. That is when her sister's eyes go from flat to glittering with tears.
"I did not give in," Lucia says. "But I did fail. I failed the crusade, the commissariat. I failed Mother, and I failed you."
She leans back again and pulls her hand away.
"The price for failure, Severina," Lucia says. "What is it?"
For an instant, they are just girls again, reading by candlelight when they should both be asleep. But that memory, like all of the others, is damaged now. Tarnished.
"Death," Severina says. "That is the price for failure."
The words fall heavy between them.
"I followed what was in my heart," Lucia says. "And in turn, I have broken yours. For that, please know that I am truly sorry."
Severina shakes her head. She has to do it to keep herself from crying.
"My heart is not broken," she says. "Attachment is a weakness, and I am better rid of it. Better rid of you."
Lucia blinks. Then she nods. A tear traces its way down to her chin.
"Yes," she says. "I think that you are."
There is still time left, but Severina cannot bear the cell any longer, nor the sight of her sister. She gets to her feet, aching now as well as trembling, burning with rage and hate, and most of all, with grief. She turns her back on Lucia and puts her hand on the cell door.
"Goodbye, Severina."
Severina does not answer. She just opens the cell door and walks out without looking back. Chapter 15. The Truth is Contained Within. Lydia Zane listens to the sigh reader tick and scratch in time with the Commissar's pen against the page, and tries not to think of Cretia Omitid, or what she was shown in the Sanctum of Bones. What she felt, upon being offered freedom and companionship. This is just another test, she thinks. Do not break. The sigh reader ticks more quickly, and Zane squeezes her false eyes closed. Please, do not break. Tell me about the tree, Rain says. Zane has told the Commissar many times about where the singing tree grew, and how she heard the Emperor's voice in the rustling of its leaves. But she has never spoken of what happened afterwards.
The singing tree,
Zane says softly.
Not long after I came into my gifts, it caught a fire.
She stops and breathes and smells it again. The burning of the singing tree. The acrid taste of smoke plays over her tongue.
Everyone in the village ran to the tree, Zane says. They tried to douse the flames, but they were fierce and strong, and they would not die until the white bark was blackened and the leaves were ashes.
She digs her fingernails into the arms of the chair. The binders on her wrists dig into her skin. The Commissar keeps writing, and Zane's birds sit on either side of her, watching.
They said it was witch's work, Zane says. That I had done it.
Her voice catches, and the sigh reader's needle does the same. The Commissar stops writing and glances at the sigh reader as it draws jagged lines like tongues of flame, like those Zane saw in the vision, burning around Omitid and Roll. Such screaming.
I pleaded with the villagers, Zane says, with the priests and the traders, with the elders, with my mother and my father.
She remembers all of those grey Antari eyes, so full of fear and hate, the same look that she has earned every day since, from every one of her kin.
They did not believe me, Zane says, so they bound my hands and covered my eyes. They cut off all of my hair. Then they took me deep into the forest, where the night was coldest, and left me there. Scattered ocean salt around me in a witch's circle.
Rain frowns. You did not argue, she asks, or fight? Zane remembers how she felt, as her hair was cut roughly with a blade. As they dragged her with her feet snagging over roots and wet earth, until they dropped her bodily to the ground, and said those words. The ones that she told Cade could not hurt her, but they always do, because she hears them in the voices of her mother and father. Spare me the ways of the witch. She had been afraid, too. But her fear had been of what would happen if she tried to fight them, of what a mess her gifts would make, of proving she was what they thought her to be, a monster in a daughter's skin.
I did not argue,
she whispers, tasting blood.
I did not fight. I waited in the heart of the forest for the witchfinders to come and take me away. To go up to the stars, where I would no longer be alone, where I would belong.
Rain's expression this time is harder to read. And did you, she asks, belong? Rain shakes her head.
No,
she says softly.
I did not.
And the tree, Rain asks, did you light it afire? Zane's hands tremble as she remembers that night, falling asleep to her mother's song, dreaming of flames. Her jaw aches, and her eyes do too, deep within the sockets, as they did when she lost them.
I never meant for it, she whispers. I did not know then the power of dreams.
Rain nods. Like when you dreamt of the King of Winter, she asks, or of the Manticore? Zane nods. It is an effort to raise her head again.
He wants everything, she says. The stars, and all the spaces in between. He will consume all of the good hearts until no more remain.
She takes a ragged breath.
Ommatid said that you would be the one to know him, she says before she can stop herself. Ask the outsider, she said.
Rain shakes her head, and for a moment Zane wonders if this is still a testing. I have my suspicions, the Commissar says, but I cannot be certain.
Perhaps certainty is close, Zane says. Or perhaps the answer is already at hand, but hidden.
Rain puts her hand into her pocket and takes out that timepiece that she so treasures. She tilts the face of it, as if to check the time.
Will that be all, Commissar? Zane asks.
Rain looks at the readout and at her notes. Yes, she says, unless there is anything you would like to tell me. Zane looks at the two birds, sitting silently beside Rain. Their eyes are like beads of jet.
No, Zane says, not a thing.
Davin Wick stands with his back against the wall in the hallway of the old Skolem, listening to the wind howl, to his kinfolk moving around, talking and singing. He picks up the smell of smoke on the wind, of petrochem from the yard outside, of blood from where it has soaked into his fatigues. Wick puts his hand in the pouch at his belt and takes out the bolt shell that Rain gave him. He lets it sit in the palm of his hand. The shell is heavy and cold, and marked with a graven aquila, like the one on the chain around his neck. That is heavy too, growing heavier by the day. Wick has been running from death since quarter, since he left his name painted in ashes under the jungle canopy. By rights, holding the shell should feel no different. It's just the fate he is owed, made real. Just the Duskhound's due. But it does feel different, this time. It makes the after feel closer, yawning wide like jaws, waiting. Wick can feel judgment looming too, the counting of his many sins. Wick realizes that it is not just death he has been running from all this time, but from everything he has done, from every instinct and every decision, from every cut, quick and deep. Wick rests his head against the cold stone for a moment longer and listens to the howl of the wind as he puts that bolt shell back in the pouch at his belt, next to the one that holds the vials. He runs his hand over his face and stands his aching body up straight, then follows the hall the rest of the way to his squad's assigned quarters. The door is wedged open, so they don't notice him when he steps through it. His wild folk are all sitting together in a ragged circle, talking. Or all that's left of them, anyway. Tian's cot is undisturbed, his spare kit still sitting on top of it, his prayer papers, and his darkwood idol from home.
Room for one more? Wick asks.
They stop talking then, and turn to stare at him. Chris and Kane, Jay and Harrow, but especially Ord. The look on his face, you'd think he'd seen the dead walk.
Sarge, Chris says. What happened?
I spoke with the Commissar, Wick says, and then she let me walk.
Ord's face is drained pale. Wick can see the tremor on him.
Then those souls, sworn to the throne, Ord says. You didn't kill them.
His wild folk stare in silence and wait for the answer, for the lie that Rain gave him to tell. Running water echoes from elsewhere in the building. Drip, drip, drip.
No, he says. I killed them.
Sarge, Chris says. What are you saying?
She's desperate to have him redeemed. Wick can see it in her face.
He feels much worse about that than he does the killing. All the things he's done, and still she looks at him that way, as if he could be a saint, or anywhere close.
They weren't sworn to the throne, Wick says. They were sighted, wearing High Command's collars. That's why I killed them.
Then they were enemies, Chris says. Infiltrating. They meant to hurt us, and you stopped them.
Wick nods. And that part, at least, isn't a lie.
I knew it, Chris says. Knew it couldn't be right.
Do you swear it?
Ord asks.
Chris scowls at him.
He said it, Jer, and the Commissar let him go. Isn't that enough?
You know it isn't, Ord says.
Chris moves like she's about to hit him.
It's all right, Julia, Wick says.
He holds out his hand, palm up. The one with the wild folk's mark on it. He takes the knife from his belt and draws it across the old scar to open it again.
I swear it, he says,
careful in the way he chooses his words, that he chooses only truths.
I swear that I killed those who meant to hurt us, and that I did it to protect my kin.
The blood wells up slow. He rolls his hand and squeezes it tight, and blood drips onto the floor. Wick thinks about his words, chosen so carefully, that he just said kin, meaning Zane, and that he said it in the moment of an oath. He thinks about that bolt shell he carries, the twin to hers, and he knows that it is a truth now. The two of them really are kin, whether he likes it or not. They are bound together by death, made and owed.
You believe me now? Wick asks.
Ord nods. He has more than paled now.
I believe you,
he says softly. Severina Rain sits on the floor of her quarters with the data reader she took from her desk. It sings and spools as the projection snaps live, and Lucia's words resolve once again. For my sister, the truth is contained within. Rain has the timepiece in her hand. The brass has warmed to her skin. She thinks about the King of Winter and what he wants. She thinks about what Lucia said to her in the penitence cell all of those years ago. I followed what was in my heart. Rain's fingers hover over the keys a while before she inputs her passcode, carefully and slowly. H-E-A-R-T. She hits the input key, and the hololith snaps to black. When it resets, Rain finds herself looking into her sister's dark eyes for the first time in more than a decade. Rain hits the key to stop the recording before Lucia can speak, and her sister freezes, with a spare half-smile on her face. It is too much to bear, that smile. That look in her sister's eyes. 100 memories come flooding back that Rain thought she had buried or dismantled, running the gantries with Lucia in Gloam's chill wind, training as children with wooden blades while their mother applauded, poring over maps and learning speeches and playing word games together until it was so dark they could not see one another. Lucia's last word in the game was always good night, but Rain would guess poorly on purpose so she could speak with her sister for longer. Lucia humoured her every time. Rain wants to leave then, but she cannot stand. She wants to speak, but she knows that she will cry. So she does the only thing she can do, what she came here to do. She presses the key and listens to her sister speak.
My sister, Lucia says, and her voice is just as Rain remembers it, clear and strong, so much like their mother's. If you are watching this, then it means that you too have followed your heart.
She pauses, and that smile slips away. The recording was captured before Lucia was incarcerated. She isn't starved or bruised, and she still wears her commissariat black.
If you are watching this, it means that you too have seen the darkness at the heart of the Baelstars and our crusade. I am sorry that it had to be you, just as I knew that it could be nobody else. You have always been the kind to seek the truth. Lucia laughs, and it is a sad sound. To ask questions, she says. You are always asking questions. Rain laughs too. It happens without intent, just like the tear that follows it and paints a cold trail down her face. She wipes it away quickly, as if it will leave a mark. I promised you the truth, Lucia says. And it will not be easy to take. For that I am sorry too. Lucia pauses and takes a breath. In the background of the recording, Rain hears a fierce storm. The darkness, Lucia says. It is not colouring the crusade. It is the crusade. The corruption touches every part of it, and the roots of it are in high command. She shakes her head. They sent us to fight on foot on Virtue, instead of collapsing the ice caverns from orbit, because they were looking for something. For the same thing the Sighted had wanted from Virtue, psychically active crystal, hidden in the ice. The Sighted use it for rituals, for rites. I saw things on Virtue that should not have been possible. One of the Nine killed in action, then active again, not a day later. Not healed. The death was undone. After we took back Virtue, huge quantities of that crystal were shipped back to Steadfast under the cover of a ghost regiment. The Strixian 99th, Rain murmurs, in the same moment that her sister does, their two voices becoming indistinguishable. It is not just the crystal they are moving, Lucia says, but weapons too. Armor, sometimes even souls. They allow the transport fleets to be intercepted by the Sighted, who use our own weapons against us. They leak information and tactical data to keep the Baelstars in conflict, ensuring that the war machine endures. Ensuring that they endure. Listening to Lucia's words is like standing before a cold sunrise, one so bright that it picks out everything in hard, uncompromising detail and shows up all of the flaws. That is the reason they want the crystal too, Lucia says, to endure beyond the threat of death. They are powerful enough to create a regiment of ghosts in order to do it, to manipulate a whole fighting army of the Crusade to their own will in order to capture heretic artifacts and then fool the Munitorum into moving them. They mean to wrest power, and they do not need to gather allies to do it, because from High Command, every soldier sworn to the Crusade is already an ally. Lucia sighs, and she rubs at her face with the back of her hand. The capture is so unstable and aged that it is the first indicator that Lucia is crying. What should you do? Lucia asks. When you cannot tell how far the rot has spread. Rain is shaking now, just as she did when she saw Lucia last. Burn it all down, she whispers, to ensure you catch it. I meant to burn it, but in this I have failed, Lucia says. My enemies have discovered me, and soon I will be just another ghost, another soul spent to keep the war machine alive. I wish that I could have told you in person, but they would have killed you, just as they will surely kill me. I could not allow that to happen, so I hid the truth away, knowing that you would seek it. Because you always do. That smile appears on Lucia's face again, just for a moment. You will not fail, as I did, Severina, she says. You will not break as Father did. You will not be like me or him or even Mother. You will be your own legend, and for that I am so very proud. And that is where the Pict Feed capture stalls and ends, on Lucia's face, and that sparest hint of a smile. Rain aches from the day, from the fight in the sanctum, from the dreams given to her by Omitid, from the blast that should have killed her, and from every duty she had to fulfill
before she could find her way to this room in peace and finally unlock the truth her sister left her. Every one of those aches pales now compared to the one in her chest. She was wrong. She let her sister die, and then killed her over and over in her memories too, every day for a decade. Rain puts her hand out, as if to touch the hololith, and it dazzles around her fingertips.
Sister, she says softly, I am sorry.
Wick turns his hand and looks at it in the dim light, at the blood from the mark he reopened and the ashes on his fingertips from painting Tian's name. The smell of the smoke clings to his fatigues and to his skin. They burned Tian's Darkwood idol, too. It didn't seem right for anyone else to have it.
Dav!
Wick's name is the first word Ord has spoken to him in hours. He says it quietly because Harrow and Jay are asleep in their cots. Wick doesn't know where Chris is, or Kane. He wonders for a moment if they are together somewhere. Wick sits back on his cot.
What do you want?
He asks. Ord is sat on the floor. He won't look Wick in the eyes.
I thought it was true, he says. I let my heart get twisted, when I should have known better.
Ord shakes his head.
It's because of the forges,
he says. And then he sighs.
No, not just that. Because of Gol too, Drast, because of Hicks and those priests, you remember?
Wick nods.
You know I do.
Ord does look him in the eye now.
Fighting like that, where every face is an enemy, it's an ugly way to do it. It splinters away the soul, piece by piece. A little more every time. You know what I mean?
Wick thinks about those fights, and the ones before it, too. He thinks about running from death, and all the things he has done.
You know I do, he says again.
When I heard about the bodies, I got to thinking that maybe you were an enemy too,
Ord says.
That maybe you'd gotten splintered so badly you'd broken, snapped.
Wick thinks about holding that shard of glass to Nerealai's throat. Splintered. Broken. Snapped.
So you went to Yuri, Wick says.
Ord nods, still looking at the floor.
I couldn't let it lie. I tried, believe me. But I couldn't work those hooks out of my soul.
He finally looks up then.
If you wanted me out,
Ord says.
If you wanted me dead, I would understand it. I betrayed the mark. Betrayed the blood we have spent.
Wick looks down at his hands, at the ash and the blood and the mark made twice now. He thinks about his death sentence, about the Cavrone and the fate engines, and the fact that the fighting will only get more ugly from here.
No, Wick says. I don't want you out. Don't want you dead either.
You don't?
Wick asks.
I want you to watch over the others, Wick says. Mind them. Make sure they aren't getting splintered too badly, especially the Voidborn. Yulia will help. She's always had too much of a heart.
The words are clearly not what Ord expects, because he doesn't answer in any way but to frown.
Do you understand me? Wick says. I need you to say you'll do it.
I understand what you're asking, Dav, but I don't understand what you're asking it for.
Wick shakes his head.
Just give me an answer, he says.
All right,
Ord says.
I'll mind him.
There's another thing, Wick says. I want to know who it was who told you about the bodies.
Ord is quiet for a moment. He glances over at Jay and Harrow to make sure they are still sleeping.
And if I tell you,
he says,
what will you do?
Set them straight, Wick says. That's all.
You swear,
Ord says.
I swear, Wick replies. One time before the Commissar's pistol is enough.
Ord sighs, long and heavy.
Colat,
he says.
It was Eli Colat.
Andron Fell waits by those same words painted on the wall, just as Rain did before him. He turns the data key in his hands. It is such a small thing, the data key, but it means so much. It might change everything. Might be as much a death sentence as a bullet. He rolls his hand around the data key at the sound of footsteps approaching. It is Rain, but she is not wearing her commissariat uniform, no coat, no cap. She has on plain training fatigues and boots, a black vest and a short thermal layer jacket, the clothing she wears for sparring and combat drills. Her dark hair is wound in a crown braid like always, but much of it is escaping, as if she has been woken from sleep. Judging by how exhausted she looks, though, she certainly wasn't sleeping. Captain, she says. There's something different in her voice, too. Fell thinks it might be the sound of hurt, and he wonders just how bad the sanctum was.
Commissar,
he says, because that is how this works.
Not dead yet, then?
The smile on Rain's face is so slight that most wouldn't catch it. Not yet, she says. Fell opens his hand and shows Rain the data key, and she nods. They walk in silence through the building that was once a Skolem, to that same room as before. Rain is masking a limp from the fight, and her knuckles are split and bruised. Fell feels guilt over it. Not that she is hurt, but that he should have been there to get hurt with her. He pushes open the door to the Skolem's old library, and the smell of damp and decay hits him all over again, like old trees turned sickly. It's that map being eaten away. The Bale Stars, turning black and rotten. Fell shuts the heavy door behind them, and the papers scudding on the floor settle. Rain stands in amongst them with her arms folded tight across her chest. He crosses over to her. In the years he has known her, and in all of their time spent fighting together and otherwise, Fell has never seen Rain look so thoroughly dismantled.
What is troubling you?
He asks her. Rain unfolds her arms and runs one hand over her hair. That is why it has come so loose.
Just an old injury, she says. Tell me what you found.
Fell knows she means more than she says, and not to press her on it. Her will is her own, as it always has been.
I found the Strixians, he says, and those who made them.
He connects the data key to the portable slate he is carrying and passes it to her. Rain pages through the records, taking them in quickly with her keen eyes.
Do you recognize any of the names? He asks her.
Rain frowns.
No, she says. Not one. Not from records or reports or even stories.
Ghosts. In all the ways it can be true, looking at these records. Every one of them is listed as killed in action.
But they are ghosts accounted for by the same Medicae,
Fell says.
Rain nods. Who is herself a ghost?
Fell asks her for the tablet back, and pulls up the medical records attributed to Isabella Luz. He hands it back to Rain.
This record is locked with a passcode on top of the Alpha Grade authorization, he says. Look at the date.
She does, and her frown deepens. Rain moves her fingers over the keys and types a word into the slate. It whirs for a moment, and then a word blinks green on the projected screen. Authorized. Fell stares at it.
What code did you use?
He asks.
What is higher than Alpha Grade?
Rain takes a breath.
Manticore,
she says. The pict feed opens to a wide shot of a Medicaid facility, like any number of others that Rain has seen across the Crusade front. A flakboard room, bare and clinical. Isabella Luz sits on a stool to speak into the capture device. She must have been in her late 30s when the capture was taken. Her skin is mid-brown, her hair shaved down to the bare scalp. Her eyes are keen and hazel-coloured, but they sit in an exhausted face. There is a minor spatter of blood on the collar of her uniform that continues onto her throat.
Begin recording, Luz says.
Surgeon Major Isabella Luz. After action report for the Battle of Steadfast.
Luz goes on to list casualty numbers. Those who went missing. Those who were killed. The numbers are astronomical, even to Rain, who knows well the cost of war. Steadfast is to this day the largest undertaking in the Crusades' history, their greatest triumph. Or at least, it has always appeared to be so.
This doesn't bode well, Fel says quietly.
Rain shakes her head. She knows they are standing at the edge of the shadow. She can feel it. Luz finishes her lists and her recordings of numbers, and then she stops and rubs absently at that blood marking her throat.
The Lord General Militant was wounded badly today, facing down the traitor calling himself Dektar the Ascended. Such cuts would have killed a lesser man. The walk back even more so.
Luz pauses and shakes her head.
5 miles, she says, with one lung collapsed and lacerations to 3 major organs. He still tried to fight his lions when they wanted to put him under and bring him in.
Luz leans her elbows on the desk the capture device is mounted on. She wrings her hands as she speaks.
I was to stabilize him, she says, and to repair a good deal of the damage that Dektar did. Though Serik will have scars and pain for the rest of his days.
Her voice skips over those last few words, and she squeezes her eyes shut and hides her face in her hands for a moment.
I cannot do it, she says. I swore to him that I would say nothing, but I cannot uphold that oath, not even to one such as him.
She checks over her shoulder, as if someone may be watching, then looks down at the desk as she continues, and not into the lens of the capture device.
The rest of the Lord General Militant's days will be few.
She takes a breath.
In the course of saving him, I found the death sentence already written into his blood, his bones. Marrow blight. The worst I have ever seen.
Rain realizes her hand is shaking as she holds the slate. She hears Fel take a breath through his teeth. Neither of them have moved since the record started. Rain feels frozen, locked in place right down to her heart.
This cannot be part of it, Rain says.
No, Fel says. It can't be.
But she doesn't feel sure, and she can tell from Fel's voice that he doesn't either.
The marrow blight is advanced, Luz continues. Too advanced to do anything much about but offer comfort and care. If he were to cede command, he could perhaps hope for 3 months.
She takes a ragged breath, and a rueful smile flickers for an instant on her face.
He told me to get him 4 months without ceding a thing, that he will not back down because the odds are poor. I will do as he asks, because that is my duty. But I cannot go without recording this matter. That too is my duty, no matter how much it pains me.
Luz shakes her head, as if to clear it, and wipes at her eyes with the back of her hand. She reaches out to end the recording, and the capture skips for a moment before restarting again. The room is the same, but Luz is different. She looks even more exhausted than before. Her eyes are wide and wary.
Begin recording, she says, and her voice is hoarse. As I feared, the Lord General Militant's condition is deteriorating. He is shedding weight and muscle, cannot keep food down. His body is poisoning him.
Luz doesn't try not to cry this time. Rain feels a tear slide down her own cheek, too.
He forgets, she says. That is the worst thing. Forgets to take his medication or things he has done. He forgets where his scars come from. And I have to tell him his own legend. Tell him the hero that he is. He fights the sickness as he fights everything, with conviction and with a powerful will. But this sickness cannot be beaten by either of those things.
Luz pauses, and her hand goes to the aquila on the chain around her neck.
Only faith can aid him now, she says. He prays. I pray. That is all either of us can do. As of this recording, I am still the only one to know his true condition, and I will not be for long. We will not be able to hide it any more. He will die, and then everyone will know.
Luz shakes her head.
And then we truly will be lost, she says.
Then she reaches out and cuts the recording again. When it restarts, Isabella Luz is completely still and staring. Her eyes are not keen.
Begin recording, she says,
and her voice is cold and flat.
On this day, I commit to record the death of our Lord General Militant, Alar Serik, our greatest hero, our brightest light, gone out, gone to the Emperor's side.
Luz is so still, it looks as though the recording has stopped. But then she gets to her feet and lashes out, knocking the Pictfeed capture device to the floor of the Medicaid facility, where it lies with the lens cracked. The vox pickup still catches the sound of a pained, wordless yell from Luz before the record ends.
This isn't... Fel says.
And then he pauses.
It's a lie!
His voice is just a raw whisper, and he is shaking as he stands there. He looks hollow, broken. Rain knows this, because she feels just the same. There is one more recording, Rain says. The final record of Surgeon Major Isabella Luz spins up and flickers to a start. She sits in a different Medicaid facility now, between a different set of flakboard walls. The recording starts with Luz looking back over her shoulder. When she turns to face the lens, Rain sees that same hollow look in Luz's eyes too.
On this day, I retract from the record the death of Lord General Militant Alar Serik, she says, because he has returned to us. He lives.
Rain knew Luz's words were coming, but they are still hard to hear, because she can guess what is coming next.
Not just lives, Luz says. He thrives. The marrow blight still endures in his blood and his body, but he is stronger now than he was before he fought Dektar the Ascended. He remembers everything.
Luz pauses. She closes her eyes in that same way she did on the first recording, and takes a deep breath.
I should be rejoicing, she says. I should be celebrating the miracle that restored our greatest hero. But I cannot, because this is not a miracle.
Luz leans right into the lens.
He is different, she murmurs. Changed. It is his eyes. They are so blue now. And then there is the matter of the mark.
She puts the flat of her hand to her chest, above her heart.
Here, she says. There is a scar that is not a scar.
No, Rain says, despite herself.
It is a fate mark, says Isabella Luz.
The recording ends abruptly. Rain's knuckles are pale as she grips the data slate.
Serik, she has to say it aloud to make it real. The Lord General Militant. He is the Manticore, the shadow at the heart of the Crusade.
Rain's hands are scarred, like the rest of her body. Scars earned fighting for the Bale Stars. For Serik.
He has betrayed us all, she says.
She can't find the strength to keep standing, so she goes to her knees and puts the slate down amongst the scattered histories of the Bale Stars. Years of blood spent and war made and souls lost.
All for a lie, Rain says. He was a lie.
She thinks of a dozen moments in her own history. Amongst them, the conversation she had with Serik on Hix at the Temple of Unlight. Lysia's graduation day on Gloam. The Forgers, when he spoke to her of her mother. Gol in Calder's Reach. the day she saw Lucia, at the holding cell, a visit that the Lord General Militant allowed to happen. Serac. It was all Serac. Rain doesn't intend the agonized sound she makes. It just happens. Fel drops to his knees beside her and puts his arms around her. Rain lets him. She leans into the embrace and returns it in kind. Just for a moment. It feels as though if she lets go, she might become untethered altogether. Lost.
What will we do now?
He asks. And he sounds lost too. Rain has spent her entire life knowing the answer to that question, no matter who asks it and why. She knows the answer just as clearly now, too. It's just the saying it. She lets go and pulls away from Fel, then gets to her feet and gives him a hand up to his. We drag it out into the light, she says. All of it. The Strixians, the Cavrone, Serac himself, and any who have fallen with him. Every one of them must face judgment. Rain looks Fel in his storm-grey eyes. This is your last chance, she says, to walk away from this. This path will be bloody, and there is no turning back.
Not a chance, he says. I swore it, remember? Until the end.
Rain nods. The words feel final.
Until the end, she says.
Steadfast. Before. The guard with the porcelain white eye closes the door behind Severina and bolts it. The sound echoes again. It reminds Severina of a gunshot and makes her think of the handful that will end Lucia's life. She puts her own hand to her chest. It is hurting so badly that she is surprised the hand doesn't come away bloodied.
Severina.
She looks up at the sound of her name. The man who spoke it stands in the corridor, flanked by two guards in black carapace and furs. He is tall and strong, dressed in ceremonial white, with that red sash she remembers slung across his chest.
Lord General Militant, she says, dropping into a bow.
Enough, he says. At ease.
Severina stands up straight, but she is not at ease. She cannot be. Not in this place, with him present. With him knowing full well why she is here. Serac waves his guards away. The one with the porcelain white eye goes too, leaving them alone in the corridor.
Did you speak with your sister? Serac asks.
Yes, Lord, Severina says.
And what did she say?
Severina thinks for a moment about that tear tracing its way down Lucia's face.
It does not matter, Lord, she says, because my sister is a traitor, and a traitor's words are worth less than nothing.
Serac nods. His ice-blue eyes are thoughtful.
I am glad to hear you say so, he says. Your mother was an imperial hero, a fierce and honorable soul. If you are to survive, then you must be the same.
Severina feels the weight of that expectation then, of her mother's legacy, every medal, every moment, down to the grand ceremony of her state remembrance service. A hero, even in death.
I will give everything, Severina says, heart and soul, as she did.
As we all must, Serac says. When you join the crusade, both your enemies and your allies will test you. Every choice will matter. Every choice will change you. So you must never forget the lesson you learned at the Scolem, and before it.
Severina nods.
Duty, honour and faith, Lord, she says.
It is Serac's turn to nod.
In time, you will come to consider your sister's failure another lesson, he says. One about loyalty. You know what awaits Lucia Rain at dawn tomorrow.
Death,
Severina says, making an effort to sound strong as she does so. The fate of all traitors.
Never forget that. Never turn your back on the Bale Stars or the Crusade, on your allies or on me, or the same fate will await you.
Serac tilts his head.
And I think the memory of Thema Rain deserves better, don't you?
Severina thinks of her mother, and how she would feel if she knew of Lucia's fate. It makes her heart ache all over again.
Yes, Lord, she says.
Good, Serac says. Then we understand one another.
Of course, Severina says.
Then I bid you goodbye, Severina Rain,
Serac says. He makes the sign of the Aquila.
For the Bale Stars, he says.
Rain makes her own Aquila in turn.
For the Emperor, she replies.
And then Serac turns and walks away, his polished boots echoing on the flagstones. And that sound, too, could as well be gunshots.
Chapter 16. Lighting Fires. Andren Fell walks back towards the Duskhound's assigned quarters, without really seeing, without hearing either. His mind is noisy with the truth. Serac. It was always Serac. Fell has spent his life serving the Crusade. Before he served it, he trained to serve it. Save for his faith, it's the only constant he has ever known. He stops walking and just stands there for a moment. It feels like the floor is tilting beneath his feet. His ears ring like a charge has gone off. It takes Fell a moment to recognize the sensation, because he feels it so rarely. Panic. He is panicking. It takes all of Fell's concentration just to find his balance again, which is why he doesn't notice Cassia Till until she is right beside him.
Captain,
she says. She is out of breath, and every one that she does take sounds like agony. Fell frowns.
Cass,
he says. It's the first time he has seen her since getting back. Since the Sanctum. Till is without her carapace or her mask. Her fatigues are blood-stained, and her face is bruised and cut. It's her eyes that are the worst part, though. Fell sees agony there, and gets another bad feeling to go alongside all of the others.
What happened?
He asks her. Till glances down at her hands, as if she's hesitant to speak, and that is when Fell notices the blackening of her fingertips from ashes. His balance goes again.
Who? Fell asks.
Maya,
she says, softly. Fell has lost many over his years of service. He has learned how to deal with death, to take the hurt and stay standing. In that moment, though, he finds he can't. Maya is gone, and he wasn't there. They lit the fire, and he wasn't there.
You said the words without me.
He doesn't intend to shout at her. It just happens.
I didn't know where you were.
Till raises her own voice in return.
When you would return, or if you would at all. I couldn't leave Maya waiting for her name.
Fell shakes his head. It's not a good enough reason.
We are kin, Cassia. We do it together, always.
We are kin, Till snaps. It's a tone she has never used with him.
You left us. Followed your heart and not your head.
That's enough, Fell says warningly. You don't know what you were talking about.
I saw you.